covering the homeland on Air America. To hear there and everywhere on the World Wide Web. This is America with John Elliott. To talk with John now, call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back. It's a gentleman I've been looking forward to talking to for about a week and a half since I got this book and started to consume it. It's the book is called The Eliminationists, How Hate Talk Radicalized the American Right. Dave Nywert is a journalist in Seattle. He's written a couple of books. He's also a National Press Club Award winner for distinguished online journalism, and he is the managing editor of Crooks and Liars. And I heard you all just say, Oh, okay, now I got it. This is an incredible book, and we welcome you to the program. David, how are you? Thanks for joining us tonight.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. You have hit spot on the major difference that I have found and that I think all of us have found, but you're the first one to truly chronicle it. And that is the difference between dialogue and political dialogue on the right and dialogue on the left. Dialogue from the right is shrill and it's fear-mongering and it shakes people up and it's done to terrorize people. And it seems to have a series of components, and you've come to call it the eliminationists, basically using a term that's been around not very long, but it's very, very appropriate when it comes to discussing these type of people. So go ahead and give us the idea where the thought for this book came from and then how you decided to put it together. It's one of those things that it can't be a labor of love because these are nasty bastards out there.
Well, a lot of my work falls into that category. My first book was a study of the militia movement, and my second book was a study on hate crimes. So, and actually, it's one of the threads. As I started kind of looking back through the books, my last book was a history of Japanese American community in Western Washington that was destroyed by the internment camps during World War II. And I realized I had this thread running through all my books that I was also talking about on my website at my blog, which was this tendency that I've labeled eliminationism, and it isn't a label I invented. I got it from Daniel Jonah Goldhagen, the author of Hitler's Willing Executioners, and I happened to be reading that book at the time that I was doing a lot of the research into the Japanese-American internment. And he talks in that book about how there was this eliminationist anti-Semitism that he argues was unique to Germany. And I'm not sure I agree with that assessment, in part because I could see that there was this threat of eliminationism certainly running through what I was researching with the Japanese Americans. And we see the same rhetoric being used against Latinos today. In fact, it's really striking to me how similar the sort of rhetoric that was used against Japanese Americans between 1900 and 1924 was, how similar it is to this kind of rhetoric that we're hearing in reference to Latino Americans today. In particular, the arguments that, they don't want to learn the language, they'll never fit in, they'll never be real Americans. Culturally, they're changing the culture of America. And, of course, the all-time favorite, which is that they're really secretly plotting to invade the United States and take over.
Yes.
And this, of course, that latter argument was so embedded in culture that even though we had stopped Japanese immigration of any kind in 1924, it was still so embedded in our thinking that in 1941, after Pearl Harbor, we immediately assumed that those old stories were true, which was why we wound up incarcerating 100,000 Japanese Americans during World War II in concentration camps. So anyway, I also began realizing, I'm also, I grew up in Idaho, and I'm kind of an Old West history buff, and knew a lot about the history of the Old West, including a lot of the Indian Wars. And I also began recognizing that there were these strands in the whole history of how we treated Native Americans, particularly during the 1800s, during the Indian Wars, the kind of rhetoric that surrounded those campaigns of extermination.
Which we basically continue to treat them just oh so fine since then, too.
Yeah, yes. Right. And then, of course, African Americans, and particularly the lynching era, and not just the lynching era, but there's also this phenomenon that we call, that's now being called the Sundown Towns phenomenon. James Lowen, the sociologist historian, has written a terrific book about it, and I recommend every American read it, which is really, it kind of uncovers this hidden dimension of how we treated African Americans in this country between 1900 and 1960, which was particularly outside of the South. We didn't have segregation in the North and the West and the Midwest. We just didn't allow them to live in our communities. We had signs on the edge of town that said, nigger, don't let the sun set on you here. Pardon me. I hope that's okay.
Yeah.
But that was literally what the signs said. And there were ordinances passed that drove these people out. And so this was, we have this whole history of driving people out and eliminating them from our midst and that sort of thing.
And these are people.
A lot of how we got to where we are.
Yeah, these are people that think they're the only Americans.
Yet
they have a heritage that has come from another part of the world, whether it's coming from England or Italy or Scotland or Sweden or wherever. And it tends to be this anti-racial backlash. And I remarked last week when this first came up about the flu, I said, well, you know, watch for the right wing to start blaming it on the illegal immigrants, notwithstanding the fact that it's a pretty good, well, it's a pretty strong step to cross the border at Tijuana and come down on your foot, come down on the other side in Israel or New Zealand. Obviously, these are people who these are all Americans that have and Israelis and New Zealanders and the Kiwis and the Canadians that have gone down to Mexico and have brought this back. It's a situation that's down there.
Right.
And anything they can do to create a divide. And where does this visceral speech come from? Because that's really the essence that tends to flow through your book. You give some examples where a college professor is just driving home and he has an Obama sticker on his bumper, and the next thing you know, you've got, well, you go ahead and tell the story.
Well, yeah, and well, you, it's a story probably a lot of people know, which is simply that, you know, he had this guy come out of his car, follow him all the way up to his house, and then get out of the car and start screaming at him and telling him that we can't wait till we have a chance to kill all you bastards. You know, that's basically what they... and that's kind of the bottom line of this. It's the same as, you know, I was noticing the stories out of Pennsylvania the other day with the case of the hate crime there.
The three policemen that were killed, is that one?
A Latino man was killed.
Oh, okay.
Upstate.
Yes.
And the jury basically did a jury nullification thing where they said, where they, you know, did it was like the
boys
old South
will be
where,
boys. Boys will be boys.
Yeah, right. It was the old South thing where they, well, not only that, but they just weren't going to convict a white man of beating a Latino man to death. And that sort of thing has gone on for a very long time, and it's very unfortunate. But it's, you know, one of the aspects of, as I mentioned in the book, it's actually one of the traits that Robert Paxton identifies of fascism, that it always comes in this form where they believe that they are the true national. They represent the true national identity, it always sends a little warning signal up to me when I hear people talking about how well we represent the real Americans here.
Which is implicit that you don't, the rest of you. And not only that, we're angry with you, and we will kill you and your kids, and we will do everything we can. And then they get into these outrageous things. It seems to me, and I mentioned this on the show at the time of the tea parties, and I said, you know, take a look at the crowd. Take a look at the pictures and the video you see of the crowd. And they are all poor, middle-class, white undereducated or uneducated, dumb, stupid people who really don't know why the hell they're there or what they're protesting. Maybe they're protesting the fact that they got a reduction in their taxes and they're not happy with that. They want to pay more. Yeah, it's just and the ethnicity is absent any of these photographs.
Right.
And it is not the America that we recognize in supermarkets, airports, sporting events, and schools. It is the Idaho America, the North Dakota America, where you know it's really just pure white. And these guys think that if they want to live in that world, they can live in that world. But you know what?
Right.
It's not their world to live in anymore, is it?
Well, yeah, that's right. It's one of the things about them is that eventually the reality catches up to them, and that's when they actually tend to act out and be the most frustrated, and frankly, it's when they get to be the most dangerous. I've been recording over the years all kinds of acts of violence, right-wing violence, and I'm afraid we're in for another phase of it. Certainly the stars are all aligned for exactly that trend right now, and it's not going to be a good thing.
They seem to be able to rally people and incite them to violence. The crazy that went into the church in Tennessee and started shooting people with his shotgun, and they found the note that said, "I'm going to kill all liberals." And then in addition, they found a book by Sean Hannity, a book by Bill O'Reilly, and a book by Michael Savage. They did not find your book from Pauly Point nor mine, Why I'm a Liberal. They did not find a lot of Pauly Point books, and they did not find any books from people. I mean, I think those guys have to bear a certain sense of responsibility. You know, the Ann Coulters of the world that rabble-rouse people because they're appealing to mental midgets. They're appealing to people that are easily manipulated and easily scared. If you look at all of the fear-mongering that Bush was able to perpetrate upon the American public, David, during the run-up to the Iraq War, it was terrorists have struck us. And he didn't seem to get the approval and endorsement of folks in Washington, D.C. and New York, where the terrorists had actually struck them. It was Topeka, Kansas, and Rapid City, South Dakota that said, "We don't want them coming here." And the message that I gave them was, "They don't want to go there either." We're going to take a break. We'll be back with David Nye. We're talking about his book, The Eliminationists, How Hate Talk Radicalized the American Right, right after this.
How can we make it work if we don't work at making it? Call John now at 866-303-2270.